I'm Adam Friedman. I'm Executive Director of the New York Industrial Retention Network, NIREN. And our mission is to strengthen the manufacturing sector, to keep manufacturing jobs in New York City, and to promote sustainable development and environmental justice. Manufacturing has changed dramatically in New York, and most people probably have kind of a false impression of what it's like. That's, you know, this dirty industry that's full of sweatshops. But manufacturing today is overwhelmingly very high-end and provides very well-paying jobs. In 1960, there were about 1 million manufacturing jobs in New York. Today, there are about 100,000. And what left were the companies that produced very standardized, low-end products. You know, Farberware made pots and pans in the Bronx. Swingline made staplers. You know, those companies didn't need to be in New York. They didn't benefit from proximity to New York's market. But there's about 7,000 manufacturers that are left here today, and they tend to be small, niche manufacturers that have to interact on an ongoing basis with their customers, with the designers, with a very highly skilled workforce. Average production wage in New York City is well over $48,000. I mean, contrast that with something like in retailing or in restaurants, I think the average wage is about $28,000. So there's a big difference in wages. And that shows something about the value of the manufacturing jobs that are here today. What does manufacturing add to the city? A whole variety of things. One of the things I like to point to is I think it adds to the diversity of New York in a whole variety of ways. Diversity of people, diversity of place, of spaces. I also think manufacturing is really important in the city for the city's sustainability. You know, we want to reduce our carbon footprint. That means we can't truck everything in. We have to be making things for ourselves. We also have this incredible, a tremendous amount of waste in the city. We need to begin thinking about that waste as kind of a horn of plenty, and what are the recyclable materials that we can pull out of that waste stream and create new products. There's a company that we work with, just an example of that, there's a company we work with in the Navy Yard called Icestone, and they take recycled glass and they make it into a granite-like countertop. And they've grown tremendously over the past few years. I think they employed about 3 people 5 years ago. Today they employ about 50 people. And I think that's typical for the green manufacturers in the city, where, you know, there's this shift in the market that's going on. People want to buy locally produced goods. Second, energy costs are going up. Since the invention of the wheel, transportation costs have been going down, right? And that's led to, over time, to the whole global economy. Well, for the first time in history, transportation costs are now beginning a long-term increase. And that's going to have a real impact on the nature of our economy, globalization, and I believe the emergence of more regional markets where, you know, there'll be regional centers of production all to some extent replace global production, global supply chains. The challenge is New York manufacturers are overwhelmingly small businesses. I think average manufacturer employs well under 20 people. So they don't have the time or the management capacity to investigate new technologies, new materials. They probably don't have the financial capacity to really retool their operations to adopt to a low carbon economy. And so there's a real transformation that has to occur on a very concrete level in what they do every day. And they're going to need help learning about new technologies and the new materials and then repositioning their company into the emerging green supply chains. We do a lot of work, as I've said, around green manufacturing. And the area where we saw this growing the fastest was in the construction industry. So developers who are building green buildings, energy efficient, environmentally responsible buildings, want to buy locally manufactured green products. We've identified 1,500 manufacturing companies in New York City that make something that goes into a building, either into its construction or into its furnishings. So that's a tremendous sector of the manufacturing industry. If you look at the stimulus plan, what it does is it creates demand, right? It puts money into, you know, retrofitting and clean energy and all the infrastructure, but there's no corresponding or very little corresponding funding to strengthen the manufacturing sector that could be making all that equipment. You know, so it spikes demand, but if you look at where wind farms are being built on the West Coast, everything that's going into them is being brought from overseas. So we're losing an opportunity to, you know, to nurture a domestic industry. In New York City, for example, the city wants to retrofit thousands of buildings, both publicly owned, the NYCHA, New York Housing Authority properties, and privately owned buildings. So what we should be doing now is figuring out what are the products and materials that are used in a building retrofit, energy-efficient windows, for example, or energy-efficient lighting, and then looking at our local manufacturers and figuring out, well, is this something you can make, and then providing them with the technical and financial assistance they need to retool and to be in the market and competing for that retrofitting work. That's the way to really get the maximum amount of job creation out of the tremendous investment that's about to be made. Probably the biggest threat to manufacturing in the city today is around land use and the shortage of decent, affordable, stable space. And if you don't have stable space, if you don't have a solid industrial area, if your area is being gentrified and you're a manufacturer, there's no way you're going to make an investment because you don't know if you can stay when your lease ends. So how can you buy a new piece of equipment if you're going to incur the expense of moving it, or if you don't even know if your business is going to be in operation in a couple of years? So one of the real challenges to the city is figuring out new types of zoning and new land use tools that can create stable areas. In New York, even though something is mapped for manufacturing use under the zoning resolution, you can have hotel development as of right, you can have most types of superstore development as of right, and office conversion as of right. So the fact that those other types of uses can exist in an industrial area has a tremendous destabilizing force and can really gentrify manufacturers out of a neighborhood. If you look at the city's economy over the past 15 or 20 years, one of the fundamental characteristics of the city's economy is the growth in income disparity. The top 20% of households have fared pretty well. Incomes for 80% of the households have been either stagnant or deteriorated over the past 15 years. And that's a function of the long-term shift in our economic base. It's a function of the mix of businesses that are here, that increasingly we have businesses that pay really well in financial services or businesses that pay really poorly in retail and the service sector. Another reason why manufacturing jobs are really important is because of the demographics of the workforce. New York City has an extraordinarily diverse population, and it needs to provide a diverse range of employment and entrepreneurial opportunities so that people have a chance to work and earn a livelihood. And manufacturing addresses a lot of that. 78% of the production workforce is composed of people of color, and about two-thirds is immigrant. About 25% of the workforce, of the production workforce in the city, has not completed high school. So if you combine that with what we said earlier about the quality of the jobs and the high wages that manufacturing pays, it gives you some sense of how important maintaining a solid industrial base is for people in the city who may not have opportunities or educational attainment or the networks to find jobs in other sectors. And related to that, it sort of raises issues of economic justice. For example, when the city does a rezoning of an industrial area, that zoning is, of course, race neutral, right? There's no racial motivation in that rezoning, but it may have a disparate impact. So that if it's rezoning an industrial area and 78% of the people who work there, whose livelihood depends on that industrial zoning, are people of color, what's the resulting impact going to be? There may be a disparate impact. There's a transfer of wealth in the form of land going on when there's a rezoning, and that has a disparate impact on race.